ลังกิตมารยาตังทักษกาสัพทะเมหานิดังชะติสมาคุลังการังโชติโตเมตถาตรุหัง
The Brahmin's son cursed the king thus. On the seventh day from today, a snake bird will bite this most wretched one of that dynasty, Maharaj Parikshit, because of his having broken the laws of etiquette by insulting my father. Purport by his divine grace.To the A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Thus, the beginning of the misuse of Brahminical power began, and gradually the Brahmins in the age of Kali became devoid of both Brahminical powers and culture. The Brahmin boy considered Maharaj Parikshit to be Kulangar,or the wretched of the dynasty. But factually, the Brahmin boy himself was so, because only from him did the Brahmin caste become powerless, like the snake whose poisoned teeth are broken. The snake is fearful as long as his poisoned teeth are there. Otherwise, he is fearful only to children. The personality of Kali,conquered the Brahmin boy first, and gradually the other castes. Thus, the whole scientific system of the orders of society in this age has assumed the form of a vitiated caste system, which is now being uprooted by another class of men similarly influenced by the age of Kali. One should see to the root cause of vitiation,and not try to condemn the system as it is, without knowledge of its scientific value. The downfall of society at its seed form. The all-powerful personality of Godhead.Was protecting the world from the influence of Kali through his beloved devotee, Maharaj Parikshit. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha Jagat Hitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namo. Krishna is very much favorably disposed toward giving protection and pleasure as well.To the Brahmins and to the cows. And the devotees of the Lord, wherever they may be, their mission in life is to assist the Lord according to his plan and desire. And we find throughout the ages the great religious kings.They were very anxious to protect the cows and the Brahmins, knowing that if these two classes of living beings flourish, then the whole society will naturally flourish, both spiritually as well as materially. It is a great science, as simple as it may sound.Even one of our devotees was explaining that the great and famous king who was here in Maharashtra during the time of Mughal invasions, Shivaji, in his seal, what is on a seal? Seal is the very essence of what your mission stands for. That's what every country or government or person puts on his seal. Generally, it's with great thought. Sometimes the biggest thinkers of the country spend years to decide what few words go on the seal because it represents the essence of their life and their mission and what it stands for. And he has said, protection to the cows and the Brahmins. Of course, today people, they say, get rid of the Brahmins in the name of their leader. But he understood that if there is not a proper standard of qualified Brahmins, given all facility to give direction to society, society is lost. The moral values, the spiritual values cannot exist. And it just becomes an animalistic society. Unless qualified Brahmins are giving direction, we cannot have a human society. We can only have an animal society. What is animal society? Recently I was listening to a wonderful discussion with His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada, and he was saying, this is what we must convince people. We must convince people, what is the difference between a man and an animal? Unless they understand this principle, they will not understand what is spiritual life, what is the goal of life. First, we must give them this knowledge. An animal is living for survival and for sense gratification. And a human being has a developed consciousness to cultivate spiritual virtues and live in harmony with the laws of God. Therefore, we should know that without spiritual direction, which is the specific service of the Brahmins, we can only have an animalistic society, polished animals. Prabhupada called them two-legged animals. And it is the duty of the kings to make sure, one, that the Brahmins are true, pure, bona fide Brahmins, and two, that the whole society follows their direction, and that they be properly protected and given all facility to teach. These are the two most important factors of a king's life. Maharaj Parikshit himself was a very, very great devotee of the Lord. And we find here that when one acts irresponsibly, not only does the reaction come upon him, but it comes on everything connected to him. If you make an offense, it's not just you that suffers. Your family, your dynasty, your caste, it comes upon all of them. That is the laws of nature. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's the story of one very, very envious landowner. His name was Ramchandra Khan. And he saw that Thakur Haridas was becoming very, very famous and well-loved for his spiritual life, the example he was living and the pure teachings he was sharing. Haridas Thakur was so humble. He never had any concern for any of the things of this world. In fact, he didn't even live in the town. He lived in the jungle. He lived in a little kutir. He worshipped Tulsi, and he would chant 300,000 names minimum every day of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare.
And he would not even care to even drink water or take food until he completed his chanting. He was such a simple devotee, so pure. Everyone loved him. They trusted him. They saw that this Thakur Haridas, what is he trying to get from us? He's completely self-satisfied, just living in his kutir. His whole life is simply for us to give. So people trusted him. Anyways, Ramchandra Khan, he was also thinking himself to be a very religious man, and he wanted prestige and power and influence over others. And he was the big person. He had so much wealth, and he had so much political power. But he saw this simple sadhu, Haridas Thakur, was getting so much respect. People were following him instead. So he devised a means to destroy Haridas Thakur. He had to destroy him. That was his conviction. So within his wicked mind, he began to devise many different schemes. And he decided that to get a beautiful prostitute to go alone to Haridas Thakur's secluded residence, and somehow or other to cause him to violate his vows. And she was very beautiful, the most beautiful, and very empowered in her profession. And she promised Ramchandra Khan, no doubt, within 3 days he will be finished. So she went, and she began to present herself through her sweet words and her physical postures in such ways that even the mind of Lord Brahma would have been very much disturbed. And she said, Haridas, you are very young and handsome, and I am very young and beautiful. It is the arrangement of providence that we utilize this wonderful opportunity to enjoy together. So Haridas, he was a compassionate soul. Paramdrisvani Vartate, because he was experiencing the nectar of the ecstasy of Krishna's holy name. Krishna's name contains all the beauty and the sweetness of Krishna. Rupa Goswami has prayed in this way. We cannot understand how much nectar these two syllables Krishna can produce. So he was so much immersed in the ecstasy of Harinam Japa that all the things of this world, Jamunacharya said, compared to the things of this world, when we are chanting the holy name, even the greatest pleasures, they are abominable. They have no charm at all. So he told the lady, out of great compassion, that I will fulfill all your desires, but I must complete my vow of chanting Harinam. I have not finished yet, so you just sit and wait. So she waited. And throughout the whole night, he chanted the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
And he went on chanting and chanting and chanting all night long. And then the sun rose. When the sun rises, this type of activity is no longer very attractive. So she said that you have promised and you did not keep your promise. He said, no, I will keep my promise to fulfill all your desires. But tonight I just didn't finish my chanting. Come tomorrow, I will try to finish and then I will fulfill your desires. So she came the next day. She bowed to Tulsi. She bowed to Haridas Thakur. While he was chanting, she was trying to direct all of her energies on every level toward him. But the sun rose, and still he said, tomorrow I will finish. I'm a little behind in my rounds. So she came back on the third day, and throughout the entire night, she was just hearing Haridas Thakur chanting, And just from hearing for three continuous nights, all night long, the Maha Mantra loudly being chanted by Haridas Thakur, just spontaneously, as he was chanting, she was also chanting the holy names of Krishna.
Krishna, 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 Krishna.
And toward the end of the night, she fell at Haridas Thakur's feet, crying tears of shame. And she said, I have come here for the terrible purpose of trying to destroy your reputation and destroy your very life. But now I have become so purified by your satsang and by hearing Harinam from your lips that now I want to give up everything of this world and be your disciple and dedicate my everything to the service of the Lord. Haridas Thakur, he said, yes, I knew this before you came, that this foolish, envious person, Ramchandra Khan, has sent you here to destroy me. And I have no attachment to this place. I was actually decided to leave, but I decided to stay three more days just to Krishna consciousness. Now you shave your head, you give away all the money and all the wealth that you made through your prostitution. You come here with one little white sari. You don't worry about food, Krishna will provide. You live in my kutir, you worship Tulsi, and you chant Harinam. And I will go away. And she became such a great saint that people from all over the world started glorifying Haridas Thakur, that he has made the most devious prostitute into a pure Vaishnavi. And Ramchandra Khan was very upset, very disturbed. As we say, his plan backfired. He was a very envious person. And later on, Lord Nityananda Prabhu actually came to that area with some of his associates. And Ramchandra Khan was just such a person. He didn't want Nityananda Prabhu to give a better impression to the town than him. So he would not even allow Nityananda Prabhu to come into his home. He said, you can stay out in the courtyard where the Durga Mandapa is. And because he disrespected Nityananda Prabhu like this, Nityananda Prabhu just left. He said, we should leave this place. This man has no culture, no etiquette, no respect. He's envious. And after Nityananda Prabhu left the Durga Mandapa, just to show the townspeople how pure he was and how contaminated Nityananda Prabhu was, Ramchandra Khan had the whole area washed with cow dung wherever Nityananda Prabhu sat. So he was offensive toward Vaishnavas. He caused pain to the hearts of Vaishnavas. So what was the result? Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami very emphatically explains for all of us to be aware of what was the result. At that time, India was under Mughal rule. The Mughal ruler came to that area because Ramchandra Khan was supposed to give him taxes and so forth. And he found some discrepancy. And they came, and he sent the army, and the army beat and tortured the entire family of Ramchandra Khan, including himself. They beat him, they tortured, they took away all of his wealth, they plundered it all, they killed animals in his temple, and then they threw him in jail, in prison, they threw his whole family in prison. They plundered all the property of everyone in the entire village and tortured them all. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, if you offend people, not only do you have to pay the consequences, but your family has to pay the consequences, your village and your society all have to pay the consequences, depending on the severity of the offenses you've committed. So we find here in Srimad Bhagavatam the severity of the offense that Sringi committed to Maharaj Parikshit was so great that the entire caste of Brahmins lost all their power and all their good qualities because of his offense. We read in the Shastras about great Brahmins, what kind of powers they have. And we see in this society today, where do Brahmins have such powers? Throughout the Shastras, there's so many examples. Because due to this offense to a Vaishnava, the Brahmins lost practically all of their powers. And not only that, but they became degraded. They lost practically all of their qualifications. And this is how the personification of Kali entered into the Kali and brought Kali Yuga about. You see, Kali knew that if you degrade the top, automatically everything becomes degraded. A person may have very strong legs and very good digestion and very strong arms, but if that person's intelligence is polluted, then all the activities of the legs and the stomach and the arms and everything else are just going to be degraded. Isn't it true? If you degrade one leg, still the rest of the body is going to function somehow or other. If you injure one arm, still everything else is going to function. It may be a little less efficient as a whole, but everything will function properly. But if the intelligence is degraded, the intelligence guides every part of the body. It's all going to be used for degraded purposes. So therefore, categorically, although every part of the body is essential and important, we must know that the head is the most important because the whole rest of the body's proper direction is based on good intelligence. And if the Brahminical caste is polluted and diverted from real dharma, then the entire social body becomes polluted. Nobody knows what to do. These days, because there isn't spiritual intelligence in the society in Kali Yuga, the different parts of the body are all fighting against one another. The arms are beating on the belly, and the belly is depriving the legs, and the legs are kicking the head and everything. If you saw somebody like this, you would put him in an insane asylum. Huh? Somebody's kicking himself with his legs and punching himself with his arms and beating himself with his head. Huh? Depriving himself with his stomach. Overeating, fasting. If somebody was like this, you would just say he's crazy. Put him away in the insane asylum. We have seen they have to put him in straitjackets so he doesn't hurt himself. But our whole society is like such a thing. All the different classes are competing against each other, fighting against each other, envious of each other. Why? Insanity isn't a thing of the legs or the belly or the arms. Insanity is something of the brain, the head. If you're insane, that means there's something wrong with your head. And I'll tell you, the most dangerous people who are insane are the people who have very stout, strong bodies. They can do the most harm. And this is our society today. We have powerful legs, powerful arms, powerful digestive systems, all misdirected by insane, no intelligence at all. And we're creating massive bombs and massive weapons. Look at society. The arms race. Everyone is just competing who can build the biggest, the most powerful, the most destructive bombs. Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada said that his books were bombs, spiritual bombs, that someday or other they will all go off and enlighten people with transcendental knowledge. So we have competition, like during the Christmas marathon, book distribution competition, arms race. Everyone's competing all over the world, different nations, different countries, different temples, to see who can distribute, who can create and distribute the most spiritual bombs in the form of transcendental literature. So that's a very good type of competition. It's not a competition of envy and pride. It's a competition of just everyone trying to enliven and inspire each other to purify society. But look at the rest of society in politics. Back in the 60s and 70s, in the Soviet Union and the United States of America, they were just full speed ahead, spending billions and billions of dollars to see who can build the better bombs and who could have more of them. This is how people were using their intelligence, the most educated people in the world. Even how did the bomb begin? Einstein, Oppenheimer, the two most intellectual scientific brains in the whole planet Earth, at least in the West, they were actually nice people, they were religious people. And they were promised that, let it, you have this keen vision to create atomic energy. We can use it for so many good purposes. And they knew it could be used for good purposes. But for years and years and years, they were working on various equations and experimentations. And then they developed this actual facility for atomic energy. And as soon as it got in the hands of others, the first thing they did with it is made bombs for destruction. They tested one of the bombs. Oppenheimer was a student of Bhagavad Gita. When he saw it, he said, "This is very bad." He thought of Krishna's words, "Time I am, destroyer of everything. Like millions and millions of suns, just blazing simultaneously, destroying everything." This is what we have done. He went on a major campaign against the government. Stop nuclear. Stop this atomic energy experimentation. Stop it now, it will destroy the world. And the government basically said, "This man, he's just been doing too many experiments. He's gone insane. He's mentally imbalanced. He needs psychological therapy. Don't listen to him." And then they just started building and building and building. And then the Russians, they got, through their spies, they got information of, you know, what, how to do it. And they also had their scientists. And soon atomic bombs and then nuclear bombs. They saw how it worked at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And, this is very good. This is how they're using their scientific intelligence. Arms race to be create bigger and bigger and bigger bombs of destruction. And that's basically what's going on today. Billions and billions and billions and billions of dollars. The greatest expenditure in the world today is in the building of bombs and weapons. That is a fact. Not in making hospitals or schools, not in feeding the poor, not in making nice parks and arrangements. The most important expenditure is to build beautiful temples for people to come and be spiritually educated by qualified Brahmins. That is the most important need. But the society is so viciously ignorant that if you try to build a temple to educate people to live a proper life, people will say, "Why you are spending so much money on this temple? Why are you not feeding the poor or making hospitals?" Although they're putting a cent of their money practically into just eating, sleeping, mating, and defending in their family. They may give a few paisas in charity a year. They say, why are you wasting money by building this temple? Why don't you use it for some good purpose? But the acharyas tell us that these temples are the most important institutions in the world to give the society direction. They're meant to save, salvage people's human existence. So this is how degraded and diverted society has become. Why? Because the intelligence of society has been corrupted due to the downfall of Brahminical culture. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada explained that his first goal was to establish a class of qualified Brahmins, Vaishnav Brahmins. And then the next stage was to develop an entire system of Varnashram Dharma, real Varnashram Dharma. Unless you first establish qualified Brahmins, there cannot be Varnashram Dharma. Because there is no direction, there is no intelligence. Today, Srila Prabhupada is explaining here in this purport the vitiated caste system. It's so degraded, so unauthorized, condemned by the scriptures themselves, this idea of caste by birth and exploitation. People have no understanding, nor do they even have any ambition to cultivate the qualities that are supposed to be assumed according to a particular caste. They simply say by birth. Marriage is by caste, everything by caste. But this caste system is meaningless. Because it's bogus. It's all bogus. Varnashram is the real thing. Caste is nothing. It has no validity. It has no place in a spiritual culture. If it's based on Varnashram Dharma and spiritual principles and living according to your particular occupational nature under the direction of God and the Brahmins, then this Varnashram system is wonderful. Then all the castes are first class. Otherwise, it's simply a waste. It's simply mundane, egoistic social identity. And everyone's so anxious to keep their caste pure. You have heard this? Marry only someone in your caste because we have to keep the caste pure. How can you keep something pure when it's already like vomit? There's nothing pure about it. It's already totally degraded. Why? Who in the caste is actually living according to the qualification of their particular varna? Has it been preserved? Are all the family members of the Kshatriya caste, are they all heroic, honest, not accepting any employment from other great warriors, willing to lead the society? That's a Kshatriya. If you don't have that, you're not a Kshatriya. Your so-called Kshatriya caste is simply farce, useless. And a Vaishya caste, if you're actually the Vaishya community, you're supposed to be living according to the Vaishyas in the Bhagavad Gita. Taking care of the cows, doing trade, doing business with honesty, and you're supposed to be under the direction of the Brahmins every step. Who is doing that? There's no caste of Vaishyas anymore. It's already so impure. And what to speak of Brahmins? We are from Brahmin caste. We must keep the caste pure. But are you actually living according to the Brahmin standards? A Brahmin can never accept employment under anyone, or he's an outcast, according to the Varnashram system. How many Brahmins are like that? You lose your caste. The Brahmins are supposed to be learned in the scriptures, gentle. They're supposed to be teachers. They're supposed to be teaching the society about both material and spiritual education. That's a Brahmin. And they have to live by the highest moral standards. A Brahmin cannot drink or smoke. Brahmins don't waste their time watching television. Brahmins are supposed to be absorbed in doing good for society, and they don't go to the cinema houses. If you do any of those things, you're not a Brahmin. Who's really a Brahmin? But yet, they're so concerned about keeping their caste pure. Forgive me if I'm controversial, but sometimes I have the urge to be honest in my social analysis of India today. We should understand what is the Varnashram system. And you cannot understand it unless there is first established a culture of qualified Brahmins who, through disciplic succession, are teaching society what is the standard of spiritual life and how Krishna wants this world to live. That is very, very important. In this wonderful, wonderful sloka, the Brahmin Sringi has degraded the whole world through this one verse. This is the verse that was the beginning of the end of religion and morality in the age of Kali. In this verse, he curses Maharaj Parikshit and loses all of his brahminical status and becomes so degraded that his whole caste of Brahmins is degraded through. And please understand this, that the beginning of how Kali influenced him to engage in this offensive activity is he thought that he had the position to judge a great soul. Very dangerous. Vaishnavas are great souls. Vaishnavas are higher than Brahmins. The ultimate perfection of Brahminical culture is to become a Vaishnava, a devotee of Lord Krishna. Anyone who is sincerely chanting the holy names and trying to live by spiritual principles is a Vaishnava. To judge Vaishnavas is very dangerous, because once you judge, then you have the tendency to criticize. And when you criticize, you make aparadha. So who are we to judge? What is your position to judge another? Even if there appears to be some defect, who are you to understand why and how it's happening? Because factually, Maharaj Parikshit was a Vaishnava. He was a pure Vaishnava. And he actually did something wrong. There was reason to criticize him. He actually, Krishna covered over his good intelligence and he placed a snake on Samik Rishi's shoulder as a garland. Not a terrible offense. It's not like he went out and did all crazy things. Just one little mistake. But it was a mistake. And Sringi was thinking, he sees there is a mistake. So due to his false pride, he was thinking that I have the right to make a judgment on this person. I have a right to mete out the proper punishment for this person. That was his downfall. He doesn't understand. According to Gita, api chet sutaracharo bhajati mam ananyabhak sadhureva samantavya. That even if my devotee engages in some abominable activity, I still consider him a sadhu, Krishna says. I consider him saintly because he's rightly situated. He may make some mistakes. She may go off a little. But they're trying to be proper, so therefore they're rightly situated. Very quickly, I will make them righteous. I will bring them above all of these inadequacies because they are on the right path. So that's the way Krishna sees a devotee. And that's the way we must see a devotee. He's teaching us how we should perceive. Because if we judge, if we think, oh, I know what this person is, and we start criticizing, we are condemning our own lives. We're not condemning that person, we're condemning ourselves. Krishna will not tolerate it. It could be the ruination of our own spiritual lives. It could be the ruination of so many people around us. We have to be responsible. As in the Bible it is said, judge not lest ye be judged. That means if you judge others, you will be judged. If you forgive others, you will be forgiven. If you tolerate certain things you may see in other devotees, then Krishna will tolerate certain mistakes you make. If you are intolerant, Krishna will be not intolerant toward you. But the difference is, your intolerance is anu. It is infinitesimal. And when Krishna is intolerant, it is vipu. Ultimately, you're going to get a lot worse than the person that you're persecuting. And that is a fact. So we should never judge devotees. We should try to help devotees, but never judge, never in a judgmental way. Devotee is never judgmental. Krishna is the judge. We're just the servants. If we see a devotee do something wrong, in a humble mood of being a servant, we may try to correct them and try to enlighten them, but we will not just try to degrade their name or insult them. You insult a Vaishnav, your spiritual integrity has been insulted by your own mouth in the eyes of God. That is a fact. We should never insult. We should never treat harshly. We should always be a servant and try to help with a constructive way of, first of all, we have to know for sure that we're right. And then we have to know for sure that we know the right way to help this person. Otherwise, we should remain silent. Your motive has to be correct, and your analysis have to be correct. Otherwise, you are indulging in being judgmental. And just being judgmental, whether you're right or wrong, being judgmental is a worse offense than anything that person has done. Being judgmental means taking the position of God. He is the only judge. Even the guru is not a judgmental person. He's the representative of God, but he's just trying to help. He's just trying to serve. He may say, you are a rascal, you're a nonsense, why you have done this, but he's doing it not in a judgmental way. He's doing it to try to uplift you and teach you. But do we have that power? Do you have that power? Do you have that right? Do you have that purity of motivation? If you think you do, then you are in a very dangerous situation. So Sringi was a Brahmin with brahminical powers. And he was obviously an intelligent young boy. But he thought he had the right to judge the activities of a great Vaishnava. And due to his imperfect perception, he could not understand how Krishna was working through this devotee, how this mistake was the plan of the Lord, how it wasn't very serious. And he became angry. Anger is very dangerous. When you become angry with devotees, beware. Beware. You're putting your spiritual life on the line, the demarcation line of destruction, when you start becoming angry with devotees and you start judging devotees. He couldn't control his anger, and he lashed out and he spoke this. On the seventh day from today, a snake bird will bite the most wretched one of that dynasty because of his having broken the laws of etiquette by insulting my father. This is just, if you just examine human nature, when a person becomes exactly what he's doing. This is what Sringi's saying. He has broken the laws of etiquette. But who's breaking the laws of etiquette? Sringi's breaking the laws of etiquette. A Brahmin is supposed to be gentle and kind to all and forgiving. In fact, according to Srimad Bhagavatam, the first and most prominent of all qualifications of a Brahmin is forgiveness. The father of Parasuram instructed his son in this way. Of all Brahminical qualifications, forgiveness is the most important. So what kind of etiquette is this boy doing? He's accusing the king. He has gone against etiquette. But he's not at all forgiving. He's cursing the king, the representative of God. That's why it said, when you point one finger toward someone, there happens to be three fingers pointing toward you. But we're so busy counting that one finger, we don't notice there's three pointing toward me. We're not going like this. We're going like this. That is our mistake. So we should judge ourselves. We should evaluate ourselves, never another. And this way we can actually develop real qualities of servitude and become pleasing in our life, pleasing to Krishna. Is there any questions? Yes.
Maharaj, taking the example of Ramchandra Khan and taking the even example of Sringi, why is it so that one person is making an offense or one person is doing a Vaishnava aparat, and why the whole village people, all of them, why they are suffering? Because some of them might be a devotees in that and they might have not done any offenses, and why they are suffering because of the ill feeling or ill thought done by one another person?
If they're devotees, Krishna will protect them.
And in Ramchandra Khan's example, everything, all those people, all the villages, everything was been taken off from by those Mughals. So how they have been protected?
They must not have been devotees. But also, from the other side, if you serve Vaishnavas, if you become purified through the path of bhakti, then everyone around you benefits. It's not only the negative side, but the positive side also. Narasimhadev told Prahlad, if one becomes a pure devotee of the Lord, then so many generations of all relatives are liberated, both past, present, and future. And similarly, any devotional service we do, any nice sadhana we perform, any way we please Vaishnavas, Guru and Krishna, our family, our generations, past, present and future, our community, our whole nation, they all benefit. Anyone who has any type of connection to us, they all benefit. So that is a good plan. It's Krishna's plan. Because you see, when we have intimate relationships with people, our lives become very much interrelated. And our benefits are shared by them, and our offenses are shared by them. We can even see, even within our little temple, if a person mistreats a devotee, everyone's in anxiety about it. Right? The whole atmosphere of the temple is polluted and everyone suffers from that. Haven't you seen? And if somebody does something very wonderful in the temple, everyone is elated. So practically, we can witness how everyone is affected by any activity that anyone does, in the close proximity especially. Any other questions? Yes.
Sometimes it happens that we are doing some service and some devotees, they are sitting aside besides us and they are criticizing others' devotees. And if we are doing that service, we cannot go away from, like, we cannot go away from that sight and we have to sit there. We are forced to hear.
You should go away. You should go away. Don't listen to it. Even if that person is a senior devotee, you should just say, please, I cannot listen to this criticism of other Vaishnavas. It will ruin my spiritual life, so I must go away. You just say that and go. But don't sit and listen.
Whatever service we are doing, we should leave that service.
Yes. If people are blaspheming devotees, you should not be there to listen. But you can tell them why you're going. Tell them that I cannot be in an atmosphere where devotees are being criticized or being misused. I cannot. I must go. But if you stay, just you're sitting there, you become a part of the offense. By tolerating it, you become a part of it. Is that, do you want to be part of it? So then you must either stop that person from speaking, or you must go. People who are anxious to criticize others, it's better if they don't come to the temple so much, unless they're willing to come here and be in a humble state of mind. You may have the urge, but if you're going to speak it, better to do it somewhere else. Go to Chopati Beach where everyone's passing stool and tell all those people what you think of the devotees, but don't say it here. Right across the street, Chopati Beach. Everyone's passing stool there. Go there and pass your stool out of your mouth. But don't do it here at this temple, or at any temple. Yes.
Maharaj, it's very natural that whenever you are in a very dominant position or you are in a position of an authority, the tendency, very thin line actually, okay, whether you are while instructing a person who is under you
Is it you are doing as a service or you are actually judging the person and giving them instructions? Very difficult. On the level of a president, on the level of a counselor, or even for that matter in Grihastha Ashram as a husband to in relation to his wife.
If you are authorized to be in a position to help train someone, then you have every right to point out certain shortcomings in that person's behavior or life. In fact, it is your service. But it should be done in such a way that that person is going to benefit. It should not be done in such a way that that person is going to suffer, simply suffer. And you have to examine in your own consciousness, are you envious of this person? Are you angry with this person? Or do you actually want to help this person? And is what I'm saying correct, according to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra? But if you are not authorized and someone is not voluntarily coming to be under your direction, then don't criticize them. We do not have so much problem with counselors blaspheming counselees. We have not seen. It's just other devotees who just take it upon themselves to be people's counselors. You have no authority to do so. And whatever we're saying should be for the benefit of everybody, not only that person, but everybody around. It should create an atmosphere of uplifting Krishna consciousness. It should not just create anxiety and enmity. Never judge devotees and never criticize devotees. And if you feel you have an uncontrollable tendency, run over to Chaupati Beach and do it there. Don't do it here. So Draupadi, you can just direct people to Chaupati Beach if they're criticizing devotees. It's the designated place for passing stool. And criticizing devotees is stool coming out of your mouth. Don't contaminate the temple with that. Go somewhere else. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada.